Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, welcome to the 394th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons Josh Baszler and Robert Jones. I'm Matt Enlow.
And I'm Warren Kaplan, and today we are talking about Tech Scouts. We're talking about our live show that's coming up, catching up on life, and our general BS sessions. Yeah, just shooting it.
We've been doing this show for 394 episodes. This is the first time it's occurred to me that there's a pun of, like, just shooting the shit.
Just shoot shit.
Yeah.
Just shoot shit. That's the name of our show. I had... you know, on our last episode, I talked a little bit about Israel and how I appreciated some people writing me things, and very predictable that triggered more people to write me things. And I sent you that one message from Tamer Alfarez.
Yeah, really nice.
And he said, I just wrapped up listening to your last episode on Just Shoot It. I want to express my sympathy for the situation in Israel and extend my heartfelt wishes for peace and love from Syria, which I thought was so cool. Because, you know, Syria borders Israel, and there has been some beef in the past. So it was cool listening to it, and he wrote, we kind of were writing back and forth, and he said, I share your hope for a future where the region can find peace and happiness, much like the positive impact your podcast has on its listeners. And I said about the dumbest thing you could say. Which is totally.
Yeah.
If we all shot films instead of weapons, things would be much more pleasant.
And you know, look, you get a pass. It's fine. You don't need to be cool all the time.
But you know, I think you and I have struggled against Just Shoot It sounding like a gun podcast for quite a long time.
Sure, that's true. That is a thing we've been trying to deal with. You know, it's funny. I feel like we just recently got like a rash of really thoughtful emails from filmmakers who just finished like big milestones. Like I feel like a couple features. We got a couple emails all at once that were like, hey, thank you. I made my feature while listening to your show and you really helped me out.
Right. Those usually are like, hello, Max and Lauren. I love your podcast and it helped me figure out how to make my feature. Please have me on your podcast.
Yeah. These were real listeners, so shout out. Thanks, guys.
But yeah, no, it's awesome to hear from people. We did hear from someone recently that just said that they enjoy these Matt and Oren episodes, so sorry there's no guest. It's funny, I'm in, you know, Atlanta right now on a job, and I was like, should I bring the line producer into my hotel room to record with me, or the DP? And then I was like, no, Matt and I are just too selfish for that type of thing.
When you're on the job and it's like we're trying to squeeze an episode in here or there, we don't need to overcomplicate it. Every once in a while, we'll do a guest episode while one of us is traveling, and it's just an extra layer of stress we don't need.
Yeah. You will notice, though, that I sound normal because I've been bringing my freaking gigantic setup with me everywhere I go.
So I'm like, you sound good.
I have the Zoom, I have the mic, but, you know, our mics are kind of big, and I have the pop filter and I have the mic stand. And then the adapter that lets you put the mic on the mic stand and these crazy USB cables.
And wait, do you have a mixer too, or are you adapting?
Yeah, I have the Zoom USB cable. H6.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
we should have just bought
the USB mics. Dude, when USB we started this podcast
9 years ago,
we were in person and we had a big mixer. People would all come to my house.
I have, thanks to all of our patrons, a very nice mixer sitting next to me that has 8 discrete channels. Yeah,
that we bought literally right before the pandemic.
And I am the only person who's ever used it. So speaking of Patreon, patreon.com/justshootitpod is the place where you can go to support us and our show. Keep our editor Noah aboard and cutting this awesome show for us. We cannot do the show without it. And also, Patreon is the place where you can get perks like access to our live show, which is my segue into us talking about our live show.
We changed the date of our live show to the 25th, October 25th now. We had to change the date of our show, but we're still excited. It seems we feel really bad for a few people that kind of messed up their entire lives in order to attend our show on the 18th and can't attend on the 25th, and we're sorry. And if you email us and yell at us, maybe we'll watch your reel or something.
We'll carry it around with us all day, that's for sure.
It will depress us, and Matt and I will feel bad about it. So, but we're super excited. We're still doing it at Sawhorse, our same place. We're sponsored by Fresh Brothers Pizza. I don't know if we were last time we talked about this, but there's going to be free food. We're sponsored by Black Magic. We're giving away a camera. We're giving away licenses, the studio licenses for DaVinci Resolve, which are, by the way, like in perpetuity. So you don't have to, like, it's not like a subscription or anything. And you get amazing, amazing features, the noise reduction stuff, like all this cool fusion stuff. Anyway, it's cool. I don't want to waste your time, but Resolve is freaking awesome.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Well, so, Oren, you're in Atlanta, which is the reason why we had to reschedule.
Yes.
And I thought, you know, it is kind of an interesting way to filter the conversation, right? Because there was a period of time where neither of us were traveling a ton. And then I, you know, before the pandemic, I was out of town at least.
I mean, you went to Russia.
At least every other month. I did go to Russia, but also like Colorado a bunch of times. We were all over the place, you know, I feel like, and have since settled, mellowed out a little bit, which is very nice. But I feel like, Oren, you were out of town a ton. It's been, frankly, it's been a challenge to record the show.
Yeah. Well, it's, yeah, I'm now trying to make it detail that is very important to me when I take a job is for it to be in LA. And I think we've talked about this in the past, but with kids and everything, it's just like really hard to leave town. It's like, it, not only is it like super hard on my wife, but when I come back, I feel so guilty. I feel like I have to do all the kid stuff and give her a break. But people are like, you're back in town. Like, can you write this up or come and meet this or do this thing or edit that thing? And so it's just like exhausting. And the time change is, I'm like the only person with this problem that can't handle time changes. But, you know, I worked on this Pinterest thing a few months ago, and I worked with a lot of executives from Pinterest, and I was talking to them about traveling because some of them go to conferences all around the world. And I didn't realize like how ubiquitous these like the Ambien use, like the basically like I fly somewhere, I take this drug, and then I wake up the next morning rested. And I've never in my life done that.
There's a great Amy Schumer article kind of before she really was a superstar about getting addicted to Ambien. And depending on where you are in the world, it's not always legal. And sometimes if it's illegal, it can be very illegal. And so, yeah, she had some real legal problems with an Ambien addiction, you know?
Oh, wow. Well, that's, yeah. I have kind of an addictive personality, you know? I've aired my dirty laundry on this podcast about my video game addiction. that I've been clean now for like 2.5 years.
Long since recovered. Yeah. 2.5 years.
I think so.
Or that's fewer years than I thought.
Has it been longer than that? When did I?
I think so.
I started playing it when my daughter was born. She's 7. Okay, maybe it was more years ago than that. Anyway, but so I'm not doing Ambien, but I got these like melatonin pills, just like, you know, over the counter stuff. Mm-hmm. And yesterday was the first time I took it. You take it like 30 minutes before you go to sleep. Mm-hmm. And I think it worked. I don't know.
Yeah. I find melatonin to be the thing that really helps me with jet lag. But you do have to be careful because you should not mix it with alcohol.
What? Come on.
Which is most of the time it's not a big deal. But like on a travel job, client dinners. And
wait,
things
what
like
if
that,
I had two drinks and then take it? You can't mix melatonin with alcohol. It seems like you can't mix anything
on the bottle.
Alcohol.
It says it's look, melatonin is not a drug in the same way that like aspirin is a drug, right, or Ambien. So I don't know. Look, I'm no doctor, but it says on the bottle that you're not supposed to mix them.
Look, Google says both melatonin and alcohol affect the central nervous system, leading to drowsiness and impaired cognitive functioning. Combining the two can amplify these effects and increase the risk of accidents or injury. Mixing melatonin and alcohol may also lead to increased symptoms of depression and anxiety. That's what I was worried about.
That's what I was worried about. Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess I'll have less drinks tonight. you know, when I'm traveling with other people and they're paying for the drinks, that's when I do most of my drinking. So anyhow, it worked for me. I recommend it. But I don't recommend it, actually. I don't want to recommend drugs on the podcast, but
melatonin, my experience has been decent. It's a supplement. It's not the same as a proper drug.
Yeah, it's a
supplement.
Literally, I just bought it on the shelf like next to where you'd buy like vitamin C. But yeah, so I'm in Atlanta and I had a tech scout today. And I did something, which it's so obvious. I almost feel weird talking about it on the podcast because everyone will be like, yeah, how else would you do it? Mm-hmm. But I just flew in last night, and so today is Tuesday, and we scout, did our tech scout today. Tomorrow we do like fittings, and then Thursday we shoot, mm-hmm. and Friday I fly back. So this is the first time I've actually been to Atlanta. So we found the location remotely. I had tech scout, the location scout sent me a bunch of links of places. We picked 5 houses, mm-hmm. and we just spent a day. He went to each house and put me on FaceTime, and we looked at, or it was Zoom actually, and we looked at each house and then we chose one based on that scout, like an in-person remote scout. And then, so today was the first time I was in the place, and I told my producer, what usually happens is you have this tech scout, and I'm sure you can relate, and you know, you go there and it's like you and your DP and your production designer and your producer and your first AD and your gaffer and your key grip and a UPM and like a few PAs and, you know, a location person. And you go in there, you say hi to everyone, you learn everyone's name. That takes 15 minutes. You grab a coffee, whatever it is, mm-hmm. a snack. And then the AD's like, hey, we got to get going. We have a hard out in 1 hour because the homeowner is like literally standing here staring at us. And they go, okay, so what's the first shot? And you're like, so in my boards, it's like over here, but like now that I'm in the mm-hmm. space, this looks a little different. And it's just so uncomfortable because everyone is looking at you trying to be definitive mm-hmm. and directorial, which by that I just mean like decisive, I guess, like knowing what you're doing.
Because there are plenty of people there who, everyone there wants to do a good job. They take pride in their work. But the further you are from the client, the more direct you need to be, basically. Like the gaffer is just like looking to make a shopping list.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Make sure that their team is covered, make sure that all of the bits and bobs are in line, basically. And they're not especially worried about whether or not the joke is going to land if you put the camera here versus there. They care very much, but it's not their purview. Yeah,
they care, like, if we want a light outside the window to make sure there's a place to put a light stand outside the window and run power to it and all that stuff.
And does it look good?
Yeah.
Right. But, like, yeah.
And so tell me if you've ever done this, because, again, it's beyond obvious. But I told my producer, he was like, yeah, the tech scout's going to be at 9. I was like, can you do this for me? And it's, we're only scouting one location, one house. So it makes it easier. Mm-hmm. It was like 9, DP and Oren. 10, mm-hmm. production designer and Oren. 11, mm-hmm. rest of the crew comes. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I showed you, we did like a previs animatic. And the reason we even had time to do that and figure it out. And actually what I showed you is different than what was in my boards. Because in my boards, I was going to shoot a different part of the house for the entrance. Mm-hmm. And
you see it and you're like, oh, or an idea comes up or whatever.
Yeah. And then not only I get to talk to the DP about the shots, but he gets to be involved in the production design, the art stuff, which is really important because he needs to know like what is shootable and what's not and directions and stuff. And then when we all split up, I can talk little details with the production designer and he goes, talks to Gaffer and Key Grip and they are getting there. Cause usually what happens is, we're all moving at the same time and he's talking to the Gaffer and the Key Grip while I'm talking to art people and the AD is like, how long is this going to take? And you know, so this was just, it was just so pleasant to split it up.
What's great about that is that you set expectations for what you need. And it's funny because you're reminding me of my last tech scout was really fraught because I had really sold photo boards as the guiding principle for this shoot, specifically because...
Did you take the photos in the location?
I took the photos in the location, and we also, like, matched our lens size and distance.
Like, used Artemis or something?
No, we brought in a camera with the same size sensor and, like, approximate...
Oh, like a DSLR lens choices.
Like a DSLR, exactly. But the reason that we did it is because it was such that we really needed to be specific about what was happening in the background of everything because it was a lot of different products, basically, rather than just one. So we need to know how much of this wall are we going to see, which you always need, but it had real tangible costs in terms of printing, skinning, and all of that stuff.
Right. Am I allowed to ask which job this was for?
It was for, yeah, you can say it was for the Reddit job, basically. Cool. We were doing all sorts of, like just tons of propage, basically. Like our art team was huge. But I had not done a good job of outline. I was like, oh, this is really important and I really need time. I did not say how much time, etc. And so I was constantly running into this issue where whatever location I was at, I was like, really, I needed to like get in there and get creative and like shoot the boards right. And it was just me and one other person. And I just, you know, just didn't structure the boundary, the guardrails for what I needed. And so these boards were like functional for me, but you couldn't show them to client. Mm-hmm. And we'd foregone having board artists so that we could put the money elsewhere, whatever. And I was just like, ah, dang, boy, did I mess this up? Just because I didn't outline how much time it was really going to take to do that stuff.
Right. Yeah. No. And it's stressful. And like something I try to tell, you know, you and I work with, I mean, we work with all sorts of people. The thing that I like try to bring up with like agency and client people. And I mean, it really, really applies to commercials because you're serving so many different people, but even in narrative stuff and is probably TV, I assume, is similar. Is like there, like to me, part of filmmaking is taking a camera and like figuring out where to put it and then discovering something better, you know? Like you hear about Michael Bay, who does these like $200 million movies, being super opportunistic, you know, saying like, we just spent 4 hours setting this shot up. Let's turn around. The sun looks better in that direction. And when you're doing photo boards for yourself, and you probably scouted like 4 different locations and then did photo boards at each one. So you're like not giving it like your all, you know, you're like maybe from here, maybe from here, maybe from here. Oh, that would be a little better, but we didn't get that shot.
Or your DP's not available, or they are available and they're kind of coming out to do you a favor. And you're like,
or the furniture is just configured totally different than it will be when you're shooting.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's like you have these approximations and then people like start trying to lock you into that. Like, well, the photo boards show this, so you can't show that. And so, yeah, it just today like brought me back to like, hey, how nice is it if just the DP and I go and look at a location and say like, hey, there's a cool handrail on the staircase. Why don't we shoot through it? You know, not that we're doing that.
Or even like to explore that and be like, you know what? That's not right. And there's not like six guys who are like, oh, shoot, hold on. Does anyone have an eraser?
Right.
You know, like, you know, yeah. Cancel that. Okay. You know, like everyone, which is a product of their efficiency and their commitment and their craft. But to my point before, if you don't carve that out and communicate your needs, then it gets lost.
Right.
You can't protect that part of the process.
How important do you think is a tech scout for a shoot? Like, do you think you could, have you ever had a shoot where you couldn't make the tech scout?
Yeah. You know, I am where I couldn't make the tech scout. Boy.
Or is there just no point to have a tech scout without the director there?
I think there's kind of no point.
I guess like kind of the grips might want to know if they needed to get wall spreaders, right? Or what the power situation
is. Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of a circumstance where I could imagine producers being like, okay, well, then if you can't make the tech scout, then we won't have one and we'll save those rates, basically.
Right. Because people usually get paid a full day rate or like a half day rate? How does that work?
Yeah, it kind of depends. I think I always advocate for a full day because they're shopping the second half of the day. They've got stuff. It's not like they like leave after the tech scout.
It's not like they can take another job on that day.
And they can't take another job, which is that's the main guiding principle for me. Like a half day, you know, I don't know. Not my favorite. So I think like it's kind of an all or nothing thing. But I think the more that you prep and communicate and the further in your career you get, the less likely that happens. You know, like I can remember being like hearing snide remarks from crew members that are like, well, if we would have been on the tech scout, we would have known to get these bulbs or whatever. You know, but that's kind of been a long time because I've been lucky, I guess, basically.
Yeah.
Or it's been so chaotic that like that's the least of our worries, you know. That's the other side. Like if there's no tech scout, that tends to be an indicator of like bigger fish to fry.
Totally. Yeah, I think some of like the best shot things and the best kind of most interesting angles come from when you really get to like live in a space, you know, for a couple hours. Mm-hmm. When I was at Disney, we built our own set for this like high school detention room. And I remember before I made my shot list, I just like went and like sat on the set by myself, you know, and just kind of looked around and like thought about it. And I was like,
yeah,
this is amazing, you know, just being by myself.
Yeah, it's
here.
Incredible.
And like,
yeah,
now I'm making a list
thinking about
my favorite thing. So when the DP comes or the production designer comes, I can be like, what do you think of this angle? Or do you think it's easier to do this or this, or, you know? But so often we're just thrust into these locations and just expected to know exactly what to do.
And there's an element of performance to
like leading
most of commercials.
Scout. Yeah.
Leading a team. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You know, it brings to mind, there's this YouTube channel that I've endorsed before called In Depth Cine that, you know, is relatively technical, but they had a video essay just recently that compares Greta Gerwig's approach on three different films, Nights and Weekends, Lady Bird, and Barbie, right? So $15,000, $10 million, a kajillion dollars, and like how she sliced and diced it. Nights and Weekends is she co-directs with Joe Swanberg, who is also her co-star.
Okay.
And, you know, it's like South by Southwest, 2002, Mumblecore, DVX 100, 101.
Love it.
But so they talk about like the way that they would shoot it. The DP on some panel or something, in some interview explained basically because they would shoot it. They shot it over the course of 18 months. So just kind of when they were in each other's lives, they could do it. And it was about characters who were dating long distance. So the shooting in that way kind of lent itself to the aesthetic of the film. But so the DP, they'd all meet up together. They kind of talk about the scene a little bit. The two actor directors would go get coffee, and then the DP would light the scene with kind of just a rough understanding of where they were going to be, because it was all going to be improvised anyway.
Right. Like lighting 360 kind of.
Yeah, essentially. Right. And like, I think the DP was the whole crew. Like I said, $15,000 budget. So like when we say lighting 360, we mean like adjusting the blinds and blasting one light into the ceiling or something. Yeah. You know, we're talking about luminance or as much as we are style.
Right. And just, and but in case you don't know, but we mean like you can turn around 360 degrees in a room and point the camera in any direction.
Right, right. Which is important because if you don't know where your actors are going to be, then it's hard for you to know what your shots are going to be and therefore how a stand might interfere with trying to get the shot that you right. need.
You know, ooh, I just had an
which
idea.
Which is a...
We should invent like floor lamps and plants, floor plants, house plants, that are like combo stands that have like, you know, some stand that comes out of the top of them that you can put a light or a reflector on.
Or you want like a sheath. You want to be able to cover a combo stand with a plant that like wraps around it, basically.
Yeah, I guess that can be like a felt plant that you just wrap around.
Yeah, exactly.
Wrap and then you can shoot. Then, yeah, it's gone. Just get like the tallest things that's you really would put funny. In a room and build, make them into stands. That's how you light.
There's an awful lot of monsteras in this scene, Oren. I was thinking about that approach a lot, because it's how we both started as well, right? Like kind of in different worlds.
Yeah. I imagine it's everyone started like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think of a certain age, everyone was like, oh, these cameras, you could make a movie with this or a web series with this or a funny sketch video with this and put it on YouTube. So of course, that's kind of how it works for everyone. But that freedom to make something lyrical and loose and in the moment and organic, but boy, it sounds nice, right? It's really the opposite of the work that we're doing now, right? Where, you know, you've got...
I'm literally talking about, can I make this 7 frames long instead of 22 frames long?
Right. Right, exactly. Those are the conversations you're having. And there are 16 other people who have to weigh in and be like, yes or no, you know? And I think, look, in the case of Mumblecore, it was out of necessity, out of like not having enough money, but inadvertently creates a safe space to be creative in the same way that we're describing and lamenting, you know, being able to be on set without all of the other stakeholders. And so I think there's a lesson there in just kind of finding different ways to stand up for yourself and create coves of creativity.
Right.
You know, like it never occurred to me that I could be like, hey, we're going to stagger the call times so that I have an hour with just my DP and then an hour with my production designer as well before we do all of that. And look, sometimes you can't do that. Sometimes
the location gives you an hour.
Location is
total.
Like, yeah.
Well, to be for
which was the case with, you know, some of that
full transparency. Stuff. So they set it up to be 8, 9, and 10, which of course I'm on West Coast time. So for me, that's 5, 6, and 7 a.m., which means I didn't have to get picked up from my hotel at 4:30 a.m. And I was like, why does this have to be so early? And my producer's like, well, do you want half an hour with your DP and a half an hour with your production designer, and your call can be an hour later? And I took it. So I ended up cutting it down to half an hour because I...
Yeah, I mean, waking up at 4:30 a.m., that's pretty rough. 5:30? Yeah, which is what you did, basically.
I had to get picked up from the hotel at 5:30, but yeah. I was curious, what did she say the difference was between Lady Bird, the $10 million, and Barbie, the $100 million? Because I wonder if there's a huge difference between those two.
Yeah, I mean, certainly... It's a little bit of apples and oranges. I think Lady Bird to Nights and Weekends is a better comparison because it's still just about people and locations. Mm-hmm. Whereas Barbie, you have to build a
The scope is just
world.
Immense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Just from a production design perspective, you know, there was no Architectural Digest YouTube video on Lady
Bird. They didn't use up all the green paint in the world to make Lady Bird.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I know we're a a little short for an episode, so I'm going to spring a new topic on you to get your opinion. And if it's not good, maybe Noah can edit it out. But I'm working on this other project right now where we're creating these OLVs, they call them, online videos, which are basically commercials, but they will only run on YouTube and Instagram. So they're not social video. They're not like vertical TikTok videos. They're still 16:9, mm-hmm. and they'll
like they're digital only.
They're digital
like,
only,
like a YouTube pre-roll.
Yeah, so YouTube pre-roll or on Facebook. The agency that is writing them up is basically hired by the company that they're making these commercials for to be like their digital agency. So you'd give us the kind of crazy YouTube-y stuff, and they have a totally different agency that is doing their broadcast TV spots. So what's interesting is one of their really big asks of me as a director is how can you make this feel like a YouTube video and not like a broadcast spot? And they have a lot of ideas on this, which like I have to say, I don't quite agree with a lot of them. I can either tell you their ideas and see what you think, or I can just ask you off the top of your head what you think makes the difference between a broadcast spot and like a YouTube video. Mind you, I'll tell you the big caveat here is the YouTube spots also have to be 15 and 30 seconds so that the length cannot be the differentiator.
Totally. Yeah. So I think this is what you're asking. You let me know. But to me, the core difference, the most important difference between something digital and something broadcast is that broadcast is a passive experience. It's on, you're watching the football game, and you're just waiting for it to be over. So do you need to hook people in those first 3 seconds, 5 seconds? No. You can let the joke evolve and the punchline land at the end, and then you have the title card where you finally learn what the product's about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if it's digital, if it's social, certainly, if you're scrolling past, right. If it's a YouTube pre-roll and you've got that, you're skip. Just, your mouse is hovering over that skip ad button, anything like that where you the viewer, the user, can actively decide to stop watching your commercial, needs to grab their attention and make them aware of the product as soon as possible. Hook them.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah. Because on TV, they can't skip the ad. They can leave the room, they can't do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't have control over whether they leave the room or not. So, you know, the thing is that most of our favorite commercials, the commercial where you're like, oh, this is so funny or so memorable or so heartwarming, all of those spots are broadcast spots and they have a little bit of room to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
these social spots are just like, you know, hey, guess what?
Social spots.
It's like
justshooter.com is the place to you where you can do and then you sort of explain it and then just shoot it, you know, like you just have to cram it down their throats.
So you'll be surprised to hear. I totally agree with you, but that was not kind of what we were getting as feedback and how to make it YouTube-y. Because I agree with what you're saying.
So are they looking, because that's more of a formal assessment. Is this an aesthetic ask? Are they saying start in a close-up, shoot with a handheld phone, that sort of stuff?
It's closer to that. I mean, they basically kind of are saying like an SNL digital short is kind of like the North Star of like what a digital spot should look and feel like, and they're really pushing for like bad continuity, like weird, like kind of overlit, like less, making it less cinematic, and they have a concern that it needs to feel different than a broadcast spot. So if we shoot it like we usually shoot, you know, awesome backlighting, like kind of moody things, like interesting camera moves, smooth dollies, Alexa 35, Master Prime lenses, it'll feel like a broadcast spot.
So what we're breaking down is like Far Side Key versus a ring light front light, basically, is what we're saying.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be a ring light, but like, or they're saying like maybe mess up with perspective or edit back and forth. Like I think Tim and Eric, they didn't mention Tim and Eric, but I feel like that's like kind of a good reference of just like bizarro editing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's like, I feel like in 2023, I mean, you know, we watch videos on YouTube that look better than broadcast commercials. Like, it's not a production value thing anymore.
I mean, I think there's a little bit of like, well, can you give me a comp of who you're thinking of who makes videos like this? Because, yeah, the era of UGC, user-generated content, is what we used to call that, homemade, is gone. Even if users are generating the content, they've got really high-end DSLRs that create incredible images, and formats have solidified, mm-hmm. right? So even if you're in your bedroom, a ring light costs you $89.99, probably cheaper, frankly, and you're using your app on your phone to like make your own teleprompter and, you know, using CapCut or whatever. Like all of the tools are so accessible that everything is kind of standardized in a way that where they're not making those mistakes anymore. And so, like, I would be pretty challenged to find a contemporary example of the sort of production quality that they're talking about with any views at all. The majority of content that people are consuming has a level of polish that I think is far and away more pristine than what they're talking about.
Yeah, especially in narrative. I mean, there's a script and there's characters and there's casting and there's all the things. There's this guy, I've endorsed him on the podcast before. His name is Daniel LaBelle. I just looked him up. He's got 26.4 million subscribers, so people probably know him. All his videos are vertical, and they're super funny and super good, and they look like they're shot on iPhone, and they're like kind of scripted. Like, he has an idea, you know?
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the difference between YouTube and TikTok, though, right? Like, TikTok does intentionally look like a green screen, looks especially bad. Those keys are really wonky, you know, things like that, maybe.
Yeah. But so to me, well, so I guess my main difference in thinking between what I think makes a YouTube video YouTube-y and what they think it's a production value. It is like, they actually were like, yeah, let's do a bad green screen key of someone popping into the frame. Mm-hmm. I'm like, sure, we can do that. You maybe would see that on a broadcast spot because they reference these things a lot, but you don't actually see it that much on YouTube nowadays. But to me, it's the writing. Like, if you want it to be insane, you have to have
write it.
45 different random things are happening at the top, and there's text on the screen, and there's this and that. But then the client sees it and they're like, this is confusing. Let's just have them do this normal thing. Then it's, to me, like, the difference between broadcast and YouTube is the writing and is like how kind of edgy and crazy and insane you can be. So I don't know. I'm curious if our listeners have opinions on like what makes a digital commercial versus a broadcast spot. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at justshootitpod@gmail.com. But I'll let you know how it goes, because we're really doing like this back and forth of like trying to make it look funky and weird, but not bad, you know, because at the end of the day, like, we want to shoot stuff that we're proud of.
Intentionally bad also tends to be a turnoff to people. So
yeah. And it's like, just hire the YouTuber, you know, that makes the bad, like you said, find the comp you like and call that YouTuber and say, hey, let's make this video.
Would you like $50,000 to make this? And they'll be like, yeah, sure.
Probably be way cheaper and easier. Anyhow, it's just an interesting thing, because I kind of feel like this was a big topic like 10 years ago. Like, let's make it YouTube-y. But then I feel like it's still kind of resurfacing in this new kind of digital versus broadcast spot thing. So thanks for chatting about it. I guess I should probably go do some Georgia stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But
Georgia?
Yeah, she's on my mind.
Georgia.
But before I go.
Yeah, well, do you have a few more moments to endorse with me?
Yes.
Unpaid endorsements.
I already mentioned it, but In Depth Cine has a new video, How Greta Gerwig Shoots a Film at Three Budget Levels, that I endorse. 14 minutes long, thoughtful, interesting. And what I love about this YouTube channel, and like I said, I've talked about them already, but just to reiterate, the host is thoughtful and experienced and a real working filmmaker. Like, it doesn't feel YouTube-y. It's about high-end films and independent films. There's room in my heart for Potato Jet or whomever as well. Right. You know, like, give me a camera review all day. This is about movie making, filmmaking. Again, whether that's independent or studio is fine by me. Yeah, some really thoughtful, cool video essays, in-depth cine, and specifically that Greta Gerwig episode is great.
Awesome.
But also they'll break down some, like, frankly, some stuff that, like, was nice to have a refresher on. He talks a lot about lenses. Like, if you're curious about 45 degree versus 360 degree shutter angles, pretty cool, thoughtful, clear explanations. Depth of field, down to the science of it as well. It's pretty cool. Yeah. Oren, what you got?
I'm like looking around my room here, like, what can I endorse? Voss water. I do not endorse it. I'm not into it.
Yeah. It's expensive and bad. What did you watch on the
TV? I watched Past Lives, the movie. I liked it a lot. And I just endorse watching a lot of movies on the plane. So I traveled with the cinematographer that I'm working with here. And I was like, ooh, let's see what movies are playing. And he was like, I don't watch movies on planes. Mm-hmm. And I was, it's just funny. People with kids versus people without kids.
Sure.
It's not a competition.
Even before I had kids, I love watching a movie on a plane. Partially because I've decided that I just am not, any work worth doing, I'm not going to do well on a plane.
Yes.
So just either sleep or watch movies. Like, so now when I sit down, as soon as I am seated, I'm watching a movie. I've already like figured out what one I'm going to watch in the terminal. And I am like, well before takeoff, I'm like 15, 20 minutes into a movie before that plane is in the air.
Yeah.
And it is great.
Yeah. The worst is when it's like you have 5 minutes left for the movie and like your plane is landing. You're like, I just got to see the end. And then they come over the loudspeaker and they're just giving you all this needless information like the weather and what baggage claim carousel your baggage is on. And you're like, I just want to see the end of this movie.
Please.
Yeah. So Past Lives is what I saw this time. And man, airplane Wi-Fi is just the worst.
Yeah. Again. It's not worth trying to do it.
Yeah.
Right. Like, what were you like while you were working? What were you
trying
doing?
To finish a treatment?
A treatment?
Yeah.
Ugh. Oh,
and it's like,
shame
you
on
know,
you.
With these like
it's impossible
giant GIFs that won't load and Dropbox killing. Yeah. And the them just kind of like keep resetting the internet. Like, excuse me, do you know how to get on the internet? Anyway, don't, if you're traveling, don't count on getting anything done. You already know that. Dude, we got to get some good unpaid endorsements for our live show. Save some good ones. Maybe even bring something in person.
Oh, no.
I challenge you to find an unpaid endorsement that you can give every person in the audience one of. Maybe it's a snack. Maybe it's a meditation technique.
That's certainly not going to happen.
Okay. Well, we'll see.
All right.
You'll find out October 25th.
That's right. See y'all there. And if you can't make it, let us know. You can cancel your ticket. That's helpful to know.
Please
too.
Cancel our ticket. But if you do want to come, we probably should have said that it's at the beginning. It's live.justshootitpod.com is where you can get the information.
Thanks again, Oren. If you have other questions for us, you want to hit us up, you want to tell us about how shitty we are for moving the dates, you can always email us at justshootitpod@gmail.com. We're across all social media at justshootitpod. And I'm at Mr. Matt Enlow across all social media, especially Letterboxd.
I'm at O. Kaplan. This episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. Our producer is Tyler Small. And you're listening to music from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. And we will catch you next time. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Goodbye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.